What? Oh, well. We're
Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Leal welcoming you to the LL Research radio program, In the Now, Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert. Today is Friday, January 7th, 2011. Happy New Year's to everyone. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research, and I'm the head moderator for the Bring Forth Forums at bringforth.org. That's bring, the number four, th.org. A wonderful and loving community dedicated to the study of the Law of One and related topics. I'll be asking Carla questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask Carla a question, please join the chat room on the webpage for In the Now at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. If you'd like to ask Carla a question live on the air, call 347-884-8770 and press the 1 key when prompted. When you call, you'll be able to hear the show, but you'll be on mute until I patch you through to Carla. Again, that number is 347-884-8770. When done, I will put you back on mute, at which time you can either continue to listen to the show by phone or you can hang up and listen to the show on your computer. When asking questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Please also visit our sponsor, Alan Feibelman, at waternurtureslife.com for information regarding high vibration, life-changing, alkaline antioxidant water, medically certified in Japan, crystalline structured water, a great way to get a good start for the new year, for radiant health for wanderers and humans alike. And that is waternurtureslife.com. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert of LL Research. We will be here every Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern. Hi, Carla. Are you there?
Hey, I am. Thank God. By the seat of my pants, as usual, I am here. I want to say, before we go on, I want to say a word about the Kangen water machine that is advertised here. Alan Feibelman is an agent for that company that sells it, and the entire LL Research group got together, the ones that are on the forums, various people donated and bought our family, Jim McCarty and myself, a Kangen water machine. And Jim tells me that since he began drinking the water, his osteoarthritis has improved to the point where he doesn't gel when he sits down and then tries to get up again nearly as badly. He doesn't gel when he gets off his mower. He mows lawns for a living. And I am very impressed with that machine. I haven't been able to drink it myself yet. I'm working up to it.
Okay.
But I've had surgery. But I just wanted to say that of all the things that help some people, don't help other people, this particular water, by virtue of what the machine does to the water, sort of lining up all the molecules so that they're crystallized, seems to have an effect on just about everybody's body that uses it. It's not a gimmick. It's a good thing. So I just wanted to say, you know, we're really proud to have that sponsor because this particular product is a good one.
Thank you, Carla.
Yeah, I wanted to tell you, Monica, that by golly, I finished the teaching on the class that I recorded for International Metaphysical University. So LNL Research will have a presence at IMU. I taught for 12 hours on the principles of the Law of One, and they're going to offer that course in the new year. I don't know exactly when.
Wow.
I think it may go live as early as next month.
Beautiful. We're looking forward to that.
It feels good to have it done. And I have an awful relationship. I don't mean awesome. I mean terrible relationship with some mechanical gadgets like recorders. And I had the worst time recording that class. I blew out a couple of different recorders, and it's nothing that I do on purpose, of course. It's just the energy that I have, and I've always been deaf on recorders. And we discovered that this particular recorder is sensitive enough that the guts of it have to be in another room from me. And every single time I record, we have to change the 9-volt battery because I drain it just that fast. So, but we got it done.
And that's just you talking, right? just being near it. Wow.
That's just being near it. Yep.
So, so how does one access this course?
Well, one goes to internationalmetaphysicaluniversity.org or intermetu, intermetu.com. It brings up the same screen. And click around on it, you know, until you find out where you can take the classes, and then click on my class.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I'm thrilled. Really good. Okay. Well, I will go ahead and go with our first question, unless you had any other announcements to make.
No, I do have another announcement to make, actually. I got a call this last week from a fellow named Paul. His last name is Paul. He is an executive for a satellite radio network, and he wanted to steal me away from you and our people and get me to host a talk show on his satellite radio, or at least he wanted me to try out for the job. And among the many things he told me while I was carefully telling him that I would not take that job were that I should always start out radio programs with a rant. Now, I can rant about certain things. Let's see. I can rant about how we need to love each other. But I wonder if I want to inflict that rant on our listeners, because a rant is designed, according to this guy, not to educate, not to inform, but only to make everybody be astounded at my brilliance. So you know what? I don't think I'm going to do a rant about love. I think I'm just going to say, Monica, let's love everybody today. And let's pass it around. And now let's go to questions. That's what I'm here for.
All right. That sounds great. Well, we're happy that you're going to continue with this show. So that's good to know. Okay. We have a question from Nabil Nasser. And Nabil, I apologize if I'm not pronouncing your name correctly. Nabil says, hi, Carla. Love and peace. My question is simple. Is first love made of 12 units of light? And what is the difference between love and light?
Okay. Hey, Nabil. I got your identity wrong last time, and I want to apologize for that because you asked the most interesting questions, and I felt as I was disrespecting you because I got you mixed up with another guy whose name begins with an N, and he's a blogger. He writes very nice blogs. You're not he. I got that now. As to first love, I'm not familiar with the term, but I would guess that the first love would be the original second distortion of the law of one, which would be the one great original thought of love, unconditional love, or the logos. I do not believe that love is quantitative. I don't believe it can be counted. It doesn't have 12 anythings. It is to be noted, however, that the number 12 in Gematria, the Kabbalistic number game, means completion. So in a sense, not literally, but figuratively, 12 units of light would be the completion of light. And so you could sort of squeeze it in to say, well, maybe that way. But in actuality, the one great original thought is infinite, because the creator is infinite, in its original sense, in its unpotentiated sleeping sense, the active principle of the Creator is love. That is the nature of the Creator, and when he decided to know himself, the Creator invoked a creation whose first principle is the active principle of love, or logos. So, no, love cannot be quantified. It is infinite. And I would say that first love is probably equivalent to the logos, or the one great original thought of unconditional love. Now, the difference between love and light is nested in the cosmology of the Law of One. I'm responding according to the Law of One. The only thing in the Law of One that's not a distortion of the law is unity. All is one. That is not a distortion. That is reality. That is the realest thing in the cosmology. The first distortion of the Law of One is free will. It is by free will that the Creator chose to know itself, and therefore created the creation and us so that we would gather this information, pass it on to the Creator, and the Creator would know more about itself, because we are all holographic images or parts of the Creator. The third distortion of the Law of One is light. Now, here is the interesting thing about love and light. You can roughly equate love to time and light to space, in that the nature of the creation is vibration or movement. And that vibration expresses in a couple of different ways. And they're reciprocal, which figures for third density, which is entirely a reciprocal density made up of dynamic opposition of all kinds, light, dark, positive, negative, fear, love. So you have two ways in which love, or time, and light, or space, can manifest. They can manifest as love light, which is time space, or light love, which is space time. Now, space time is all of the manifested universe that we can see with our physical eyes, feel with our physical fingers, and so forth. It's the space time continuum. That's the world that we live in, a consensus reality, if you will, or the matrix. Time space is the inner realms, where we are in between incarnations, where most of the densities are, is in time space. They are unseen by us because they are not manifest in any chemical sense. They are electrical, just like our energy bodies are electrical. So you have the energies of love matched together with the energies of light in such a way, or time matching together with space in such a way that time is ascendant, so that time is the field and space is the river. And that's the nature of the inner planes. Then you have space-time, the physical realms, where space is a field and time is a river. You cannot step in the same river twice. The old Greek philosopher said, I think it was Thales that said that. So we are able to go anywhere we want in the world by just pointing our car or our feet in that direction and getting going. In time space, in the unseen realms, the time is simultaneous, basically, and so you can go to any time that you want to, just like you can go to Chicago or New York or London. So it's quite a bit different, the two ways in which space and time or love and light interact. One is a mismatch between space and time favoring time. Those are the unseen realms. The other is a mismatch between space and time favoring space, and that is the seen worlds. And in the same way, light-love would be the manifested worlds. Love-light would be the unmanifested worlds. So love is the thought, the energy, the logos. And light is that which expresses that thought using the materials of space-time and creating the universe as we know it. The dynamic between love and light has created all that there is. But all that there is infinite. So that you can never say, okay, this is everything, and therefore the entirety of the creation is finite. That will never be, you see. Because infinity is the one thing that matches unity. We cannot have a finite number of planets or galaxies or star systems because we have an infinite universe and an infinite creator. So it's a wonderful cosmology that's filled with mystery and paradox. And when you hit paradoxes and when you find yourself in the midst of a mystery that you cannot explain, then you know that you are on good ground, spiritually speaking. So I hope that answers your question, Nabal. Thanks a lot for it, and I appreciate it.
Okay, well, that was an excellent, excellent explanation, and I actually got a lot out of that as well, putting that into a very good, clear explanation. So we have another question from Terry, and this probably was asked right before Christmas, and the question is, what is peace in Christ Jesus' eyes?
Well, that's an interesting question. You know, when Jesus was talking about peace, he said, "Peace I give you, not as the world gives I unto you." So Jesus wasn't talking about peace in the literal sense that we think about peace. And interestingly, when we think about peace, don't we basically think about it as a lack of shooting? When you stop shooting guns, that supposedly is peace. We've managed to achieve peace if nobody's actually shooting at each other. And I don't believe that, spiritually speaking, that is anything close to the definition of peace. So I think the way Jesus would have intended to express peace would be the peace that, as St. Paul said, passes all understanding. There is a peace that comes to people who know who they are, and they know why they're on this earth. They feel that they are here to love people, that they're here to help, they're here to make a difference, that kind of thing. It's very commonly said it can be considered a cliche, and yet cliches are true. That's why they get to be cliches. I think that the peace of which Jesus was a proponent is the peace in one's heart. We know when we have peace of mind and peace of heart because we relax and we enjoy life. We might have a lot of problems. That doesn't cut up our peace. Our peace reigns undisturbed as long as we live in faith, as long as we know that all is well and all will be well. And I think that is the kind of peace that Jesus was talking about. Jesus was not a person who believed in war of any kind. Remember in the Garden of Gethsemane on the night before he was crucified. One of his followers drew his sword, and Jesus said, put up your sword, you know. My kingdom is not of this world, you know. Don't fight for me. I'm not going to be a king. Don't think about it that way. And gently steered his disciples away from taking up arms against a sea of troubles. But his message had to do with loving and serving those whom we meet as though they were Jesus himself. At one point, Jesus was talking to his disciples and said something about, you know, thank you for visiting me in prison. Thank you for visiting me as a widow, as an orphan. Thank you for feeding me. Thank you for clothing me. And they were troubled, and they said, you know, Lord, when did we do these things? And he said, oh, as you do them to the least of these, my brothers, you know, you do it to me. So he was asking us to look at each person that we see as though we were looking at Jesus the Christ. And I remember something that Mother Teresa said. Somebody asked her how she could possibly slave away in the streets of Calcutta trying to save people that were so terribly, terribly close to death from starvation and from the various ravaging illnesses of the area, because they were living on the streets and they had no health care, they had no home. And she was wiping flies and the eggs of flies away from sores on this poor child's face. And it was smelly and it was ugly and it was just dreadful. And she was doing it with the greatest of gentleness and love. And he said, how can you do this? How can you lean over this terribly sick child with no revulsion and just love this child? And she said, if I were looking at a human face, she said, I couldn't do it. But I know that I am looking at the face of Jesus the Christ. And so, of course, I can do it. And that is peace, I think, in Jesus' way. He asked us to love each other as we love ourselves. And he asked us to love the Creator. And I think when we have those two things going, when our energy body's clear and our hearts are open, and we can feel our devotion to the Creator and feel that connection, and when we look at all of, you know, in our minds, look at all of our life, all of our relationships, and we love our people and we know that our people love us, there is an absolute peace that enters your heart. You know who you are. You know why you're here. You know your mission in life. And, you know, the mission can be as simple as allow love to flow through me. That is a wonderful reason for a life. And it is entirely adequate. You don't have to have an outer service that looks good on the outside, because it's all about the inner life anyway. Jesus' peace was about inner peace. Our peace needs to be about inner peace, because as we are peaceful in our hearts, I believe so the world will wag. If enough of us find peace in our hearts, there is soon going to be a problem finding somebody to pick up those big guns. But not until we have peace in our hearts will we have peace in the world. Jesus was all about peace in our hearts.
You know, that seems like something so taken for granted to me. I think of Jesus as the Prince of Peace. And yet, I have found myself in conversations with some religious fundamentalists that tell me, oh no, Jesus was not about peace. Jesus said, I came to bring a sword. And Jesus is in favor of war. And how would you respond to that? I mean, I'm really startled when I hear that statement made. in reference to Jesus?
Well, I think that he was referring to the Kabbalistic figure of the Archangel Michael, who wielded the sword of truth. Jesus' single weapon was the truth. He certainly did come to bring a sword. He brought truth. He brought truth to sit between the lies that we tell each other, so that they can't be told anymore. And he has created trouble wherever his teachings have taken hold, because the world wags on in a relatively service to self way. The big movements of this earth, the things that fly above the radar, tend to be done for self-serving reasons, whether it's the self-serving reasons of the nation state, the self-serving reasons of a particular person that has an enormous amount of power, or what. The large movements tend to be service to self. But the huge majority of the earth's peoples, the tribe of humankind, are service to others oriented. And they don't even want to play the big games of power and influence and so forth. So the love in this world tends to move below the radar. But when Jesus said that he came to bring a sword, that the sword was the sword of truth. It wasn't a physical sword. Both the Old and the New Testament show a lot of respect for beating swords into plowshares, changing war into peace, and so forth. The difference between the Old Testament and the New Testament is that the Yahweh figure of the Creator seems to have been warlike and to take sides and to be a lot like humans, not like the Creator that you would think would be entirely different from humans. And the New Testament Creator, the Creator of Jesus, the Creator that Jesus called Abba, Father, is definitely a Creator entirely shot through with love. If you take Jesus' teachings, just look at the red print. I've said this before, and I'll say it again. You find a radical peacenik. You find a revolutionary for peace. You find a communist, not a communist, but a person who believed that all things should be held in common and that we should all look out for each other. It sounds a whole lot like communism, but instead of the state being an impersonal, monolithic, energy. Jesus' concept was Hillary's village. You know, it takes a village. It was like, have a community and hold everything in common and make sure that everybody's needs are met. So it was like one big family that loves each other. So, yeah, Jesus's sword was the sword of truth, Monica.
Okay, thank you. There is a brief follow-up question that I think you've partially answered already. The follow-up in relation to that was, this is from Terry, I noticed my emotions seem to fluctuate a lot lately, especially to the ones that are close to me. It's easy for me to get impatient or angry over some small and trivial matters. Is it related to the increasing 4D energy, fourth density energy? Without infringing my free will, would Kuo teach me how to achieve better inner peace so that I won't hurt the ones I love casually or carelessly?
Well, we will have a private channeling session, Terry, and Kuo's will weigh in on that. But my own answer to the seeking for inner peace is inner work. First of all, I do think that it's quite possible that the waning of third density has an intensifying effect on catalyst. And that's because as third density light wanes and is more and more interspersed with fourth density light, you're getting a lot of light that tells the truth in a way that is very hard for us to bear. That means that we're more and more sensitive to the hall of mirrors around us. Now, the loved ones cosmology posits a world that is entirely unitary, so that I am you and you are me, and you are a mirror to me and I am a mirror to you. Each is a teacher to each. And if something that you say, Monica, bothers me, or Terry, something that you say bothers me, then it doesn't tell me about you. It tells me about myself. This is the cosmology of the Law of One. What it tells you, what it tells me, if I'm disturbed by you, Monica, is it tells me that there's something that you did that is triggering the awareness in me that there's a part of my shadow personality that I have not yet integrated into my daylight consciousness. Say that you said something that hurt my feelings. Okay. Well, why did it hurt my feelings? So I have to go back and I have to look at that trigger. And I have to figure out where that bothered me. Okay. Say it bothered me because I have a low self-worth. And because I'm all too ready to think ill of myself, and I think you're criticizing me, and therefore I get my feelings hurt. Well, I have to go back to why was I so ready to be sure that I was not worthy? Where did that come from? So generally, this kind of contemplation takes me back to my childhood, because it was in my childhood that those voices were in my head saying that wasn't good enough, you should try harder, that would have been a nice effort if you had only done it this way, thank you for trying to help, but I don't think you're good enough to help, that kind of thing. I got a lot of that when I was a kid because my parents were very perfectionistic, and they just wanted me to do things perfectly, and sometimes I wasn't old enough to do them well yet. And I was still learning, but they weren't ready to be patient with me and let me learn. So I became convinced quite early that I was not very worthy. And so say that you've triggered that in me. Rather than being upset with you, my part is to do some inner work. My part is to go back into myself, find that little lost child, and hug that child and bring it the love that it needed. Maybe it didn't get it back then, but I have all the love in the world to give it now. So it's very important in this atmosphere where you're getting so much truth, so much fourth density light that we really almost can't handle. And we're so sensitive because of that. It's more and more important to do the inner work, not to give in to impulsivity, but do more than count to 10 before you speak. Just don't speak yet. Do the inner work first. Find the peace within yourself. Find the healing within yourself for that little lost child that didn't feel worthy, or for whatever it was that the trigger had to do with. Do that work. Then come back to the person that was kind enough to give you the catalyst that enabled you to do that inner work in such a skillful way. And at that point, you're ready to say thank you, not to take that person's head off. So it really makes a huge difference, I think, if you can take the time to go within, seek the silence, and use both your mind and your heart to work with yourself. You use your mind to analyze and figure out and be logical and go back in time and, you know, figure out what chakra this issue has to do with and all of those specific things that you can do with your mind. Solving problems, the mind does that great, you know, do that part. But there's also the part with your heart where you look at yourself with love. And you love what you see. And all the imperfections and all the flaws and all the quirks and oddities that make you who you are. You see all of that. And you realize, I love this person. This is a good person. And you take yourself in your arms and you just love yourself. It isn't a self-indulgent thing. It's a healing thing. A lot of times you need to be your mom. You need to be your own dad. You need to be your parents. You need to be that nurturing, maternal, paternal, loving entity that maybe you didn't even have as a kid. But you can do that for yourself now. And the more that you take care of yourself, the more you love yourself, the more you rock yourself in the cradle of your heart, the more you will be able to love other people as well. Because when you can forgive yourself for being yourself, then you look out at all the other souls, and they also have their quirks and their oddities, but they also are parts of the Creator. And so you love them and accept them as they are. And that's the great key to treating people well, is just respecting them and not trying to change them, so that, you know, you're interested in supporting them, in honoring them, in doing whatever you can for them, even just staying out of their way if that's what they want. But you're not interested in changing them. You're just interested in loving that person precisely as that person is. And there's a tremendous peace, speaking about peace, that comes with that.
That is an excellent explanation and really good advice, I think, Carla, because there's, you know, just looking around me, I see so many people going through such intense catalysts with personal relationships. As we spoke of last week, even on our forum, we've had some of that going on, and it's just so clear that the 4D light is really raising a lot of those issues to the surface so that they can be healed. So thank you for that. We have one more question, and I would like to remind everyone that if you'd like to call in live to the show, you can call 347-884-8770. That's 347-884-8770, and we probably have time for one more live caller if anybody would like to call in. For now, we have a question entered into our chat room from Will. Carla, how are 4th through 6th density entities, let me rephrase that. How aware are 4th to 6th density entities of us 3rd density beings? How aware of 3D beings are the 4th through 6th density entities? Are we in their awareness in the same way that we are aware of 1st and 2nd density? This is from Will.
Okay. Well, thank you for that question, Will. It's one that makes me stop and think. I would think that, yes, the 4th through the 6th density is aware of 3rd density in the same way that we are aware of 2nd and 1st density. I think that would be entirely true. It's, however, a very difficult thing to wrap your mind around, because after 3rd density, there's a shift from a chemical to an electrical environment. So you have the rest of the densities of Earth taking place in time-space instead of space-time. So you have the awareness of all the souls on Earth and all that they're thinking, because they are part of the tribe of humankind on planet Earth. And they are a force that is more and more one which calls upon the consciousness of the higher densities than 3rd, as they become more cohesive in their thinking. In other words, as we begin to approach the end of 3rd density, as we begin to try to become not just a social complex, but a social memory complex, our combined thoughts begin to have more power because they are more unified. And the way the Confederation describes their relationship with their density earth beings is that they have heard the call. They have heard the cry of planet Earth's people. And there's tremendous sorrow in that call and tremendous request for help. And they want to help. And they have come to speak with through instruments like me because of that. So the awareness that they have is not just of one particular human, but of the energy of the tribe of humankind as it becomes a clear voice. And apparently as our voice as a human race becomes a clear voice here in third density Earth, we are calling for help. We are calling for healing. We are calling for the truth. And they have every hope of helping us with that. But their message, as they often say, is so simple that they realize that not very many people can hear it. Their message is simply that you are a frequency and the Creator is a frequency. And the more your frequency matches the frequency of the Creator, the more you're able to avail yourself of the Creator's thoughts, the more you're able to think like the Creator and to take part more and more in the dance of life. First and second density has no problem doing that because they are entirely aware of all of creation. They may not be self-aware, but they're aware of the energy of all of creation. Fourth density and above is aware of the energy of all creation. There's one density where the veil of forgetting falls, and we are not aware of the way things are. We are not aware right offhand, instinctively, of the dance of life. We are not aware of our unity with each other. We are basically in the dark as to our true nature, our true purpose, and the meaning of life in general. Hence all the confusion and all the chaos that we experience. But it is only in this darkness that we are able, by free will alone, to choose the manner of our being. And it was important to the Creator in creating this particular creation that all choices be made in free will. The only way to ensure free will was to block out the larger truth, to block out the bigger picture, so that the choices that we make don't have the energy of a take-home test where you just thumb through the book until you find the answer and then you write down the answer. There's no real power there. We have to struggle through the darkness until we find the light. We have to choose to love each other, to choose to love as opposed to fear. We have to choose the manner of our being and choose the things that we decide to do and that which we desire, and all in the darkness of unknowing. So it's a very different kind of an environment here in third density in the school of Earth. And we are here to make choices. The main choice that we're here to make, according to the Confederation, is the choice of service to others or service to self, the choice of our polarity. So we are not aware of all of the other beings, even in our own density. And we are only aware of the animals and the plants tangentially. They probably don't figure largely in our lives unless we're farmers or unless we have the habit of walking in nature or are outside for some reason and part of the outside, part of that environment. Most of us are urban. We're indoors for the most part. And our lives are only tangentially connected to the earth. So it would be great for all of us if we could more and more, you know, come into contact with the earth, come into contact with the various animals, even if they're just in a zoo. Look into some eyes that are not human And for that matter, look into some eyes that are human and are different from us, so that we begin to get a sense of the glory of the variety of humanity and creatureness on this earth. I think it must be incredible to be in the higher densities and be utterly and completely aware of the vast, immeasurable weight of all of those souls that make up the infinite creation. Imagine feeling the thoughts of whole societies of people as they are, you know, seeking together. I can't really imagine it. It's too far outside of my ken, but I think it must be a wonderful thing to know how things are, to be in possession of that thing that is so casually called the truth. We certainly do not have that here unless we are inspired, and I think that we can be inspired. We can move past all of these limitations, these darknesses, this unknowing. The veil can get very thin for us, and it actually can part completely, and we have these moments. I think we all have these moments of epiphany where suddenly everything is very simple, and we see the beauty of it all, and we see the rightness of it all. And for one split second, or maybe for a few minutes or an hour out of our lives, we have become aware of the perfection of the universe. Not what it looks like to the naked eye, but what it looks like to the heart. And that knowledge is a kind of truth, a kind of knowing, that is so far beyond intellectual knowing as to be a whole different kind of knowing. It would be called gnosis, you know, G-N-O-S-I-S, gnosis, rather than knowing, because it is full of insight and awareness. I have these moments frequently. I go just, I don't know, out of phase in a way. It's really impossible for me to say when it's going to happen or why. I never really know. But for that time, I am delivered most blessedly into a place where I am absolutely certain that all is perfect and all is well. And it's a real blessing and a real healing, because obviously in everybody's life there is suffering, there are problems, there are perceived difficulties. And when we are in that state, we see the difficulties as gifts. We see everything as a gift. And it's a wonderful healing just for that moment. And it's something that you can take with you. You can't give it to anybody else. But thank heavens that we all have those moments of epiphany, so that we're not completely locked within our senses and the limitations of them. I think it'll be really fun to be fourth density and upwards, and to be aware of third density and all the densities.
Well, that segues beautifully to our last question, which will you've already partially answered, and we just have about 6 or 8, maybe 10 minutes left. But the last question is from our chat room, from Mark. And Mark is wondering about life in fourth density. What do we have to look forward to? What are the challenges? And what third density challenges can we look forward to dropping?
Okay. Well, the main challenge in third density that we drop when we move to fourth density is the challenge of dealing with a physical vehicle that is a chemical distillery. There are lots of good reasons to eat, not connected with the body. It's a wonderful chance to get together. It's, you know, a wonderful chance to show love by creating the food. It's terrific to have good company and to laugh and to share. There is a marvelous ambiance to the dining experience, shall we say, that moves far beyond zapping something in the microwave and eating it in front of the television or the computer. But basically, we have to eat. At least most of us have to eat. I've heard that there are people that can live on light alone, and I even talked to a woman who had a roommate who apparently did just exactly that, and she actually would rise during the time that she was sleeping on her bed, and she would start making scooping motions, and she'd be bringing air, seemingly, towards her face. And she never remembered doing that. It was not something that was part of her conscious awareness. But she did it every night of her life. And because this friend of mine was her roommate, she saw her do it. She knew that she wasn't faking it. And she never did see her eat. So not everybody all the time has to eat in order to live. But most people, if they don't eat after about, 3 months or so, they're going to start sickening because they don't have enough of the various elements going into their digestive system to produce the bodily functions. Protein especially. If you don't have enough protein, the DNA kind of falls apart and the body falls apart. But we won't have to eat. Now, I believe that people still get together and share broth. There were some regressive hypnosis sessions where people went back to what seemed to be higher densities. And one of them especially impressed me. They were talking about, it's collected in Chapter 8 in Secrets of the UFO, which Don and I wrote together and published in 1976. And it's still a good book. And in Chapter 8, it talks about some of these hypnotic regressions where they're talking about living. And it seems like it's either fourth density or fifth density. And they're talking about coming together for a meal, but it's a very light broth. And it's, they don't need to eat, but they enjoy coming together and they sip the broth as part of their being together, as part of their ritual. So that would be the first thing that would go, was that we would not have to care for this chemical distillery. We wouldn't have to feed it. We wouldn't have to put it on the bathroom throne and eliminate the excess that our body couldn't use. It will be nice to be freed from the necessity of eating and drinking and the necessity of staying close to a bathroom at all times. I am especially sensitive to that because I've got interstitial cystitis and I'm always looking to see where the next bathroom opportunity is going to be. So that's the first thing that we can do without. The other thing that will be nice to leave behind will be this constant unknowing. Even those that are nearest and dearest to us can say things that we don't understand. And we can't see into their minds. We don't know why they made that statement. We don't know what emotions they're really feeling that they may be hiding from us. There's a lot that we don't know. And so it's not just our enemies or strangers that are going to take us by surprise. Our nearest and dearest can also take us by surprise. And a lot of times we can have a lot of misunderstandings. So I think it would be a blessing to be in a higher density where the veil of unknowing is lifted. And we know what's in people's minds. It's not that there's a prurient interest in knowing what other people are thinking. We know what we're thinking. We know what they're thinking. And there is no reason to use that information. It's just comfortable knowing where people are coming from and not having to worry and think in our minds, now, did I understand that correctly, or why is he doing that, that kind of thing. I think that not having to go there ever is going to be a tremendously relieving situation for everybody. The difference in fourth density from third density is that when you get to fourth density, the environment is lighter. It's electrical, as I said, rather than being chemical. You are aware of the big picture. You're aware of the energies that people are carrying. You see and feel that which is with clarity and accuracy. And you have already made your big choice. I'm sure I'm talking to people who all want to be of service to others rather than service to self. So that main choice has been made. So all of fourth density is refining that choice in the ways of love, learning the ways of love and understanding. Now that you have an environment where everything is known in terms of what other people are thinking, what you're thinking, how the creation works, all of this is known. You can feel the connections. You can see the connections. You know that you are one. So so much is given you that's not given you here. Another difference is that there are many more choices. Here in third density, we have a given number of choices in our life. We can think with our five senses and what those five senses can give us. We can read the accumulated knowledge or supposition of civilization. We can study our history. We can try to figure out how the world works by becoming a scientist of some kind. We can manipulate that technology and make gadgets the way technical people do, and engineers, architects. You know, we can create beauty. We can express ourselves. Those are our choices. In fourth density, there are as many geographies to learn as there are imaginations and dreams to explore. The choices are a hundredfold what they are here. There are so many different ways to serve, so many different ways to learn that we don't have here, because there is so much more space in every photon, in every little piece of light. It can carry so much more information. It's denser with information. So I think it will be exhilarating indeed to be in fourth density and be able to have all those many, many more choices of how to learn and how to serve. Now, interestingly enough, the recent readings have shown that there are many people who have graduated from third density Earth already. And a lot of those people are coming back for incarnations as indigo children because they want to help the planet. They get out of the planetary miasma, out of the veil of forgetting, and they see the situation where, you know, maybe before they ever... Uh-oh, I'm out of time. You know what? I had better turn this back to you, Monica. I was off on a... talking about a rant here. Okay, we're going to hold it back from creation and give it back to you.
We'll have to continue that next week. We just have a few seconds. We're about to get cut off here. Just want to remind everyone, you can visit our website at llresearch.org or bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4th.org. Visit our sponsor at waternurtureslife.com for high vibration crystalline water. And thanks so much for listening. You can submit a question to me at magicalmoons@gmail.com. That's magic with a K, magical moons at gmail.com. Visit us at llresearch.org. Just a wealth of information, channeling transcripts, publications, The Law of One, and so much more. And thanks, everyone, for listening. We will see you next week, Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern.